How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, welcome to it. 7:16 on a Monday morning. Sports Radio, TSN 1200, J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you. Hope you had a nice weekend. We ended up getting 19 centimeters of snow yesterday, which was, I think, when we had the weather forecast on Friday, we said, yeah, maybe 5 to 10. Yeah, we got double that, which seems to be what happened pretty much every storm in the month of January. The good news is, hey, listen, if you're going to have a lot of weather-related events that happen, you might as well make them big enough or just enough of them that you're tying or setting records. So the snowstorm yesterday did tie. So we have now tied the all-time Ottawa record of most storms in 1 month with 10 centimeters or more. So way to go, us. Nice job. That's 5 storms that we've had in January of 10 centimeters or more, if we include the one we had on Thursday, and then we had the one yesterday, and that was last done, and we all remember it well, the winter of 1924. Yes, it was 99 years ago that we had a number of 10 centimeters, or is it back then? What would 10 centimeters, that's 4 inches, right? So 4 inches or more in 1924, 10 centimeters in 2020.
And I think yesterday, I thought it was another record for January 29th as health year, which I found kind of interesting why randomly January 29th would not have had this much snow any time in history.
Mm.
So that another, just all over the place, records everywhere.
Yeah, for sure. All I know is, I mean... I was out there. So yesterday, I think I did two runs, one in the morning and I'm back from walking the dog. Then another one after the EAGLES victory.
Yeah.
It was a good way to sort of celebrate, sort of give myself
shoveling.
The shoveling. Yeah. I was like, I'm just going to go out and I'm feeling good right now.
Did you have all your Eagles gear on?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I got the hat, got the sweatshirt.
That was a pretty easy shovel though. I ended up doing it, I think about 6 o'clock, and got to say she was nice and light. And other than getting it up over the big piles there, it didn't take much.
I did about 3 passes, and now it's kind of dangerous to get out of my driveway because the snowbanks are so tall. Oh, here comes a short joke. You can't even tell if cars are coming down my street at the moment. You really have to inch a little bit out, a little bit further out.
Just gun it.
Just
gun
roll
it.
Roll
the dice.
I think they should bring some sculptor people in, guys, because I got to say, some of these people that need this sidewalk, which is, I guess, done by the city, but for some of the smaller driveway areas, guys, if you follow me in that, if you have the separated driveway, and by the time you cut the sidewalk, they've got these beautiful mounds of snow that just feel like they need nothing more than a good sprinkler system, a little bit of cold, and then just start making these all over the place.
Well, like, they're already all coming to town, right? Because this is the opening weekend of Winterlude this weekend.
But come into the neighborhood, because they are like perfectly sculpted, almost like a landscape piece. I'm like, man, that is impressive. That snow's still actually holding itself.
Normally, they go down to City Hall to Confederation Park, and they do all the ice sculptures down there.
Exactly.
Just come to Barhaven. Yeah.
Come
apparently.
To my street.
Yeah.
North Manotick. Yeah. I mean, and start just, and even just do a little bit of work, because as we all know, there's no running back on these sculptors. So, hey, come, you know, do a little bit of work on it, and, you know, kind of fine-tune your craft. I bet it's hard to find a big old piece of snow these days.
By the way, Simmer, I do have to, I think we should all give you credit for what transpired last week when I think it was businesses, but it might have been residents of the area that is south of what's been called the parliamentary precinct during the convoy, the area of kind of Spark Street and on that whole area, decided that they needed to have a name for that area. So they've gone with, because it's south of Parliament, they've decided that Sopaw is what they'd like to go with. And most people have made fun of Sopaw, but it all, of course, I think was inspired by you initially, of course, you know, in your old area, which you referred to as what?
South Rockcliffe.
South Rockcliffe. Yeah. Others know as Vanier.
Yeah, that's true.
South Rockcliffe. And, of course, now you've moved to Riverside South, or as you call it, North Manotick.
Well, actually, and again, on a technicality, Jared, since we moved across the street, we are officially in Manotick.
Oh, so
yeah. No, we are, Hammer.
Sure?
Literally across the street.
No, as you cross, what is that main road called, Hammer?
Is that Vimy Bridge Drive?
Well, whatever that road is, I don't think it's called that on the side. But
because in
but,
Ottawa,
no,
all
but,
roads
but as you,
have
as
a
you cross
name.
The road, we are actually it is listed as Matt. But you're right. I was having fun with it and got people fired up. But yeah, this is kind of they're trying to do a little Soho, right? They're trying to kind of do
yes.
a New York thing.
Yeah,
which I have no problem.
And Tribeca,
with.
Those are all yeah. short forms.
Yeah, I have no problem with it actually. And it, you know, the kickback to it. I know people are going to have fun with the initial area, but. I don't really have a problem with it. You're trying to come up with something trendy and cool, and I think Old Sopa, as they finally will get the building rolling, JR, I gotta tell you, this is some high-end stuff, too, and then the ability as a realtor, or if you're basically in commercial real estate, man, you got an opportunity to be in Sopa.
The lofts yeah. of Sopa.
Yeah, like
I can
you,
see it now.
Seriously, luxurious, eh? You could see these demonstrations of 50 people. Up close and personal from your own room, right in Sopa.
Absolutely. Or Earl Armstrong?
Earl Armstrong.
But it sincerely is. Kind of like, it's official. If you I won't give up my
That's the
address.
Cutoff. That's the border. That's where the wall will be built to separate Riverside South and Manitou.
Exactly. And it did kind of surprise me, but it is actually true.
All right, a couple of texts have come in on our discussion. We wrapped up our Sens discussion by talking about a golf clap guy in Toronto when the Sens were finishing off the Maple Leafs. He got quite a bit of run on social media. His name is Pat Hines, as we came to learn. Kevin actually texted and says, Pat Hines is 26. He's from Riverside South, Simmer, in Ottawa, working in Toronto. He's a friend of my daughter's. Quite funny, great guy. That comes from Kevin.
Yeah,
he looks like a fun guy.
Oh, with a stash like that, you're all about fun.
Was he by himself, too? Did he go to the game by himself?
Not sure. But the way he wears his hat, I don't know, it's just the way the hat is placed on the head.
Yeah.
That's just solid from and the stash, as you said.
He looked like he could work in the silent movies. You know, he said so much with doing so little, and the way it was all done. And that night, and again, you look at the Leafs and you understand the year they're having. But the night starting with the whole Matt Murray thing, and then the way this whole kind of evolved or went off, it was just couldn't be more beautiful for Sens fans.
Now, would you say so, Hammer? Now you've added that to your collection gifts.
Yeah.
That when you tweet out the podcast of the show, you've got the guy you've had forever that's got the beer in his hand.
Woohoo guy.
Yeah, woohoo guy.
Oh, yeah.
You got to have
it. That's solid. So of the two now, and sometimes, you know, the new thing is always the bright, shiny new toy.
Yeah.
So let's fast forward 5 years from now. If you're going to pick out your favorite, which of the two? Or if you're do you have another one? Or are those your two
those are my two favorite ones.
See, if we were to summarize Ottawa, and we've taken some hits here about tourism, first of all, our senator guy is there, but light rail guy will always be a favorite.
Yeah, the WTF guy.
That's not Sens related, but
sure. From an auto perspective, that one right there.
Well, Mario, man. Too. I mean, the Zub, he was fantastic, too. He's a fave as well.
Yeah.
But right now, just because he's so subtle, and it's an away game. I mean, Sens fan clapping. He's fantastic.
Did you get a load of the guy on Saturday Night Hammer when you were watching? And it wasn't a TV thing, but there was quite a character that ended up winning fan of the game. Did you see him?
Oh, rocking. What was that? Little too tight T-shirt that he had on.
He had some ability.
A little retro tee.
Yeah, he had some ability to become a character. I was sensing that, how long that T-shirt has been around since the 70s.
Mm.
And his look, and then when he pulled off his hat, I think he just had a bit of a ponytail
with nothing on top. He reminded me of the stand-up comic that liked to smash watermelons. That's what he looked like, and I can't remember what his name is, but that's. I looked at him and go, that guy probably likes to have a good time.
Yeah.
There you go. All right. Sens go 2-for-2 on the weekend. Talk more about that coming up. Dave Poulin will share his thoughts as well coming up after 8 o'clock. Let's go back to yesterday's conference championship games in the NFL, though, and we'll start with the Sunday night game. Cincinnati and Kansas City, who had played three times over the last two seasons, including the AFC championship game last year, all of the games had been won by Cincinnati, all of them by a field goal, including the overtime game last year, which sent the Bengals to the Super Bowl. Last night, Kansas City finally gets its revenge. Let's take you to dying seconds of the game. Tied at 20, Kansas City lining up for the potential game-winning field goal.
From 45 yards away, Townsend, the punter, is the holder. Looks back at Butker. Butker is ready. Now the snap, the placement, the kick is up, and it is good. 3 seconds remaining, and the Kansas City Chiefs have a three-point lead, 23-20.
As you can imagine, that is not the Kansas City play-by-play of that, but that's our friends from Cincinnati. That the color guy is always the guy that goes, nice! Yeah. When it's a good Bengals play, that's a... when it doesn't go so well.
And I would assume local radio broadcast chair, would he go to the Super Bowl?
From Cincinnati?
Yeah. Like, would they be able to
have a local broadcaster?
When they win.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, not going now. My point being is you're sitting there.
Yes, for sure.
And you're just thinking about what a blast it is the whole week on Radio Row, whatever you're doing. And the disappointment of it right there.
It was a big night for Patrick Mahomes, who overcame a high ankle sprain to throw for 2 touchdowns and 326 yards. There had been, there was a lot of talk about how the Chiefs had been, quote, disrespected, and Patrick Mahomes had been, quote, disrespected throughout the week. I don't know if there's anything to that, but professional athletes love to play with the chip on their shoulder, as does Patrick Mahomes.
I think guys were probably the most pumped up I'd seen them going into a football game. A lot of trash talk coming from a lot of different places. I think no one picked us to win. If so, it was like 5% of people. We think we've built up enough respect to have a chance to go out and win every game. So whenever you feel like you're the underdog, when you're playing at Arrowhead Stadium, it gets guys ready to go.
There you go. I do have to say, and listen, cards on the table. I picked Cincinnati. I think we all picked Cincinnati to win the game on Friday.
Yeah,
I don't know if it ended up being 5%, as he said right there, but it seemed like everybody was on the Bengals to win that game. So I get from the perspective of, Patrick Mahomes was playing in this game. Was he, and that was all along, all week, we knew he was going to play. It was going to be a matter of how much was he going to be able to move around? How much was he going to be able to be Patrick Mahomes? Even without the mobility, Patrick Mahomes is still a fantastic football player. And I think, and I can only speak for myself, got a little bit guilty of thinking too much about the injury to mere mortals and not about an injury to a guy like Patrick Mahomes, who is, he certainly didn't move around as much as he typically does, but he's still a great quarterback and he got it done last night.
Yeah, no, very much so. And you just watch him sling the ball and I think it was that final touchdown, JR. I mean, it looks like a guy, obviously he has a baseball background, right? He's just whipping it in there using the entire upper body. And, I think a lot of factors into that. Also, for a fan base that, again, I know they had a long run where they couldn't get anything done, but they've tasted a lot of success. And how much credit do you also give to the fan base in that first quarter from a noise standpoint? And both that and the energy that the players fed off were Burrow. They were just all over him, right? I mean, must have been, sacked 3 times in the first couple of downs, Jared?
Yeah.
And just, in really not trying, couldn't hear anything. And I just thought, hey, this is a fan base that they've won one Super Bowl. They've been there a bunch of times. They've hosted this game forever. But, boy, did they ever bring it yesterday as far as just kind of boosting it up and they causing some confusion for the Bengals early on.
They say that Kansas City, I think along with Seattle, in terms of the open-air stadiums, are the loudest in the NFL. I always think, I wonder if they pump in the sound a little bit. But it is loud at... what used to be known for a week as Burrowhead and is now known as Arrowhead Stadium. So, the Chiefs fans absolutely can bring it for sure. Here is Joe Burrow on the loss by the Bengals.
These games are never going to be pretty. You just got to find ways. And, it felt like that was, the tide was turning our way. I felt like we were going to, just find a way to win this game. But, like I said, didn't make the plays down the stretch.
2 interceptions for Joe Burrow on the night. He made some great throws. When the chips were down, I got to give credit to the Kansas City defense as well. They made some awesome plays. And we all thought this was going to be a really competitive game, and it was. Could have gone either way. There was a call right at the end of the game. I didn't have any issues with the rough play. We saw it called in the San Fran Philly game as well. I mean, Mahomes' foot was on the sideline when the guy pushed him out. It wasn't a dirty hit from the point of, going after his knees or whatever, but he pushed him when the runner was out of bounds. And I'm cheering for Cincinnati in the game.
Yeah.
And I thought as soon as I saw him do that, I'm thinking, here comes the yellow. I'm waiting. And it took a split second and it was actually the ref that was down the sideline. And all of a sudden you see it firing across your television screen and you go, there it is. There's the game.
And you can't argue. I just think, hey, that's just a bonehead play it there. You had the taunting call that was kind of interesting, although that went against Kansas City at the time. And, hey, you have a punt. You have a real good return. And then, to me, at that point, there was just a feeling like, oh, okay, that's over. And I was also trying to, in a group of about 10 people, I kept going back to, oh, the overtime rules are different. And how's this going to play out? And if you have the coin toss, do you go right back on the field offensively, or how do you end up doing it? I was kind of hoping for a little overtime action, but as soon as that the run back, I was like, ah, no, this thing's probably going to end.
You mentioned the punt return by Sky Moore, which set the Chiefs up in good field position, which ultimately led to that field goal. There looked to be a real big block in the back right at the bottom of the TV screen on that one, which wasn't called. And then on that Patrick Mahomes run, which ended in the rough play penalty on the sideline, it looked like there were a couple of pretty big-time holding calls on the Chiefs offensive line that did not, goals,
well, especially,
did not get called. So you understand why Bengals fans, not only was that not called, but then they get called for a 15-yard penalty that they're a little bit cheesed off at the officiating.
Yeah, I think it was that same set of down, previous set of downs that the Bengals had where, the chokehold, right, that was called and brought back, which is understandable. But, yeah, and it did become, and this is also, I guess, being focused and watching playoff games, guys, you know, you got to the point where the referee's on the TV way too much, right? It was just like, that's when you get into it. And maybe it's even more so when your team's not involved. But it was just like, are you serious? Another penalty? And I feel like, just like hockey and just like basketball, I mean, I can find something, I assume, on every play if I ultimately wanted to. So as you said, I could see some frustration from the Cincy side.
Not to pick on the kickers, too, because I'm pro kicker, but wasn't that punt placed in absolutely the worst spot you'd want to place a punt at that time, right in the middle of the field, giving the kick returner, I mean, left or right to go? Don't you want to pick a side and try to pin them in there, or at least, you know, just hammer it out of bounds as deep as you can? Yeah. It just seemed to be the absolute wrong spot you'd want to put that.
Yeah, kick. But also helped by the fact that, again, there looked like a guy who got
pushed in
the back, who might have been able, because
that
was the side that he actually ran to and ran around that particular player to go down the sideline.
It was almost like a pick play, right? If I'm thinking of the right play, Jared, like
he
almost kind of, it looked like almost a basketball set where the guy went to kind of turn, and all of a sudden, boom, the guy's right there, and not end up calling it.
Penalties, 9 for Cincinnati for 71 yards, 4 for Kansas City for 55, if you care about such things. At the end of the day, though, the Chiefs win the game 23-20, and they are going back to the Super Bowl for the third time in 4 years, 1-1 in their previous visits, and they will play the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl coming up in a couple of weeks in Arizona. The Eagles get there with if you didn't watch any of the game and you just looked at the score, you go, oh, man, that was a cakewalk. Well, it was a cakewalk, 31-7, but the reason it was a cakewalk is because, in part, San Francisco ran out of quarterbacks. Here is rookie Brock Purdy getting knocked out.
On the logo at midfield, San Francisco quarterback Purdy is under center, fakes the handoff hit as he throws. It's a floating duck. It goes floating. It was almost picked off and dropped as it was punched high in the air, wobbling its way like a dead duck, and fell on the grass, the wet grass here in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia is challenging the ruling on the field of an incomplete pass.
There is the overly descriptive Kevin Harlan with the call of the wounded duck, which, turned out to be a fumble. And it was just weird the way he played it out, because Hassan Reddick, the Eagles lineman, hits Purdy's arm just as he throws. But then as he's following through Purdy, he actually hits it with his elbow. And then it looks like a pass, but it ends up being a fumble, correctly called a fumble. And on the play, Purdy ends up getting hurt as well and was knocked out of the game, but then ended up having to come back into the game because his backup, the four-string guy, Josh Johnson, got knocked out in the first play of the second half, or the first drive of the second half, with a concussion. And so Purdy had to come back in. But because he was injured, and it was some sort of elbow injury, which resulted in him essentially not being able to feel the ball, he was unable to pass the ball at all. And so San Fran at that point was down by a couple of touchdowns. They just couldn't get anything going offensively. And the Eagles had a comfortable 31-7.
Yeah, and you felt or hoped, at least turned in more of a game. J.R. Johnson, I think, completed a pass and had the fumble himself, right? Where he looked away and all of a sudden the ball's on the ground. You turn it over. And I would assume the analogy for Purdy, guys, would be when you wake up from one of your strong naps or at night, when your arm's asleep, I'm kind of thinking, I'm trying to logically think what that would feel like, right? Where you just don't, you know, basically your arm is a noodle at that point. And obviously people very frustrated. And that was just tough to take. You know, I think Eagles would have won anyway. But when you see a dominant defense like the Niners, at least would have made it a little more fun if they were moving the ball a little bit more.
Would they have won, Simmer?
No, I don't think so.
That's all the San Fran fans in my life are all saying, oh, man, I don't know, man. I don't know who was a better team. Come on.
What about the shift they're pulling in Philly, right? 4 a.m. tailgate started on Sunday morning? Hey.
Oh, yeah. All I know is that they greased the poles again.
4 a.m.?
They greased the poles, and the fans still find their way up the poles in celebration. So that's a tradition, I guess, in Philadelphia, that you climb every available pole in celebration. And so the city works crews greased the poles, and yet there they were.
And then they were on a couple of bus stops. It collapsed, so hopefully people are okay.
For the conference championship. By the way, can I? So right after both the Philadelphia win and the Kansas City win, if you kept watching, there were commercials that ran from NFL Shop, saying, "Hey, in the case of Philly, hey Eagles fans, your team is conference champions. They're going to the Super Bowl. Get your conference champions gear." And I think I'm an Eagles fan. Okay. Why would anyone ever buy? If you won your division, or you won your conference and you're still going on.
Yeah.
Why would you ever buy a conference champions t-shirt? Honestly.
I have no idea.
Can you guys answer that for me?
No,
win the Super Bowl, yeah. I get it. I got a Super Bowl sweatshirt when the Eagles won 5 years ago. Yeah. I got one of those. Yeah. It's the Super Bowl. Yeah. I like that my team has won the conference championship now. Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah. I don't like it enough, and I went online and looked. Mm-hmm. I don't like it enough to spend $45 on a t-shirt that says conference champions. Yeah. Maybe that's just me.
Yeah, I would prefer to buy the t-shirt of the Niners because they've already printed those up. No, I mean, it would be something
heavily
funny, right?
Discounted
no,
ones.
No, if you could catch somebody, you know, hey, you guys didn't win the conference championship that year. And also, I would say with anybody, but if a franchise is fairly recently, JR, won a Super Bowl, yeah, that's not making it into it. Now, are you going to get me my Sports Illustrated magazine along with my Eagles clock and maybe my vintage video? You're absolutely right. You've just been there fairly recently and won that.
I'm not feeling
that.
Yeah,
I don't feel that as well.
I could be alone in that. And as you said, maybe for a team that hasn't been there in forever.
Oh, yeah. Maybe. Like if I was a...
Jacksonville. Jacksonville got to... they didn't win.
But
so,
even the Bills, I mean, I'm not... But I don't think for most people nowadays, hey... when you're a good team, now if you go on kind of a Cinderella run and you lose in the Super Bowl, JR, possibly.
Yeah.
But
you know
what we had in the Final Four here.
Yeah.
These are all the heavyweights. Nobody in those fan bases, and even obviously the final two teams, neither the Eagles or the Chiefs are going to go to the Super Bowl and be like, this is great that we're here, right? Yeah. I mean, they both have their eye on the prize and want to bring this bad boy home.
I've come up with the fan base that would buy the conference championship gear, and that, of course, would be the Dallas Cowboys, right? The Cowboys haven't been to a conference championship since 1996. We're coming up to almost 30 years ago. So if you're thinking about a fan base that would absolutely love the opportunity to, you know what? They should actually have printed up t-shirts that said, "We made it to the divisional round."
Yeah.
In
well,
Dallas.
Shouldn't they be Super Wildcard Weekend winners?
Yes!
Oh, that is.
Where's
that?
You know what? There's probably Cowboys fans out there in Ottawa right now wearing that gear. I mean, that's a high watermark.
And also, big Mike McCarthy saying, hey, step aside here. I'm coming in to call the play calls.
Yeah,
let's go here. I got to take this next level with Dak. Now, other fan bases of notable, I would assume as a Lions fan, should you ever win your division or make it to the Super Bowl?
We made the playoffs.
Yeah, that's
Lions
true.
Fans are. Yeah. Hey, we made the playoffs t-shirts.
That's true.
For sure. Absolutely.
I don't think you can find these at NFLCanada.com, but you do a quick search.
Yep.
And you got Dallas Cowboys 2022, 2023 NFC Super Wildcard Weekend winners.
They have those t-shirts.
They have the t-shirts.
Okay, how much is it? Let's pool our money and get one for Versace.
Yeah.
Let's get one for Versace.
That would be solid.
I'm all in.
Hey?
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in.
$22.99.
Yeah, I'm already having to put my money in for the pizza championship. I've obviously conceded.
But aren't you leading in the CFRA NFL pool?
In the relegation pool.
Relegation round.
All right. Yeah. So it is the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. The Eagles are there as well for the first time in 5 seasons. Here's head coach Nick Sirianni on that.
This is something to dream about as a kid, and all these guys on our team have dreamt about this their entire lives too, and so
just to be able to do this together with a bunch of men that love each other, that are connected to each other, that would do anything for each other. It's pretty sweet.
There you go. There's Nick Sirianni. Now, as soon as, well, not as soon as, but this, when the Eagles won the conference championship yesterday, for some reason, and Simmer, correct me if I'm wrong, you lived in the Northeast for quite a while. Empire State Building is in New York City, correct?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Yes. For some reason, the people that are in charge of the Empire State Building decided, and they tweeted this out on their official Empire State Building Twitter, that they were going to light up the Empire State Building last night in green and white in honor of the Philadelphia Eagles winning the NFC Championship. A landmark in New York was lighting up in the colors of a team from Philadelphia, which caused a fan of, I believe, the New York Giants by the name of Dan to take to TikTok.
The Empire State Building just ruined my Sunday. Can't believe I'm saying that. Can't believe what I'm looking at. They turned it green and white. Not for the Jets. For the Eagles. For the Philadelphia Eagles. For going to the Super Bowl. The Eagles, who knocked out the Giants last week. Who have been the Giants' bitter rival for a long, long time. What were you doing here? I don't want the person fired who okayed this. I just want to know your rationale because it is an all-timer. People are pissed right now. I know it's silly. Sports are silly. But I'm pissed. I'm pissed at a building.
I'm pissed at a building that is lit up in green and white. As many people, this is going to be, people were saying, the number one sports radio talk topic of today in New York City was the fact that the Empire State Building was lit up in green and white.
Yeah, I tried to figure out, Tony Malkin is the CEO of the Empire State Building here. I was just trying to figure out if there's some type of background from a Pennsylvania or Philadelphia side to it that would do that, because as you said, that is not normal and not something that, yeah, you would expect to have done. Like, even if, and again, kind of, I know it sounds strange, but if you had a federal building that was kind of, I don't know, even in D.C., right? But even at that, why would you go one team or the other?
Well, let's do the equivalent.
Somebody wins a Super Bowl.
Let's do the equivalent in Canada. So
the CN Tower.
The CN Tower in Toronto, you know, if the Sens made it to the Stanley Cup Final. I don't remember back to 2007 if the CN Tower was lit up in black, red, and, white.
They wouldn't do that.
No, they wouldn't be doing that. And what is Ottawa? I mean, the you know, the Parliament buildings are federal in nature, so not really in Ottawa. What would be the equivalent? That's Ottawa City Hall, I guess? Would they light up Ottawa City Hall? Would old Sutty, Mark Sutcliffe? Would he fire up Ottawa City Hall in blue and white lights if the Maple Leafs made the Stanley Cup Final?
I know our
they haven't done in.
I know the
CFRA
would. Everybody there is Leafs fans, so that would be a little bit different. But yeah, it's different for sure.
Yes,
that you would do that, and the Philadelphia fans would just be absolutely loving every minute of it.
All right, your thoughts on any of the football yesterday that you saw? You can text us at 12-1200, tweet at us at TSN 1200. Duke Ellington, our football analyst, will join us with his thoughts. After 9, when we come back, we'll talk about the Sens' big weekend as they go 2-for-2 versus Toronto and Montreal. We'll do that next on TSN 1200. Welcome back, 7:51 on this Monday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you. Chiefs and Eagles are going to the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks. A lot of people on text reminding us, talking about the Empire State Building being lit up in the colors of the Eagles after their win last night. Empire State Building, of course, not in Philadelphia, but in New York. Someone texted and said apparently they also lit it up after the Chiefs win in the Chiefs colors as well.
Okay.
That call may have been made after they realized the controversy over the Eagles thing. Several people texting in this morning reminding us that when the Habs beat the Leafs and eventually made it to the final, that the CN Tower was lit up in, I guess, red, blue, right, or blue, white, and red.
Oh,
the Habs colors.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
I don't. Was it after they beat the Leafs or after they made the final? I thought it was when they made the final. Okay, so that
was it a lost bet?
No, I'm guessing that was.
They're federal buildings, right? Yeah. I mean, the case of the CN Tower, I think, is it not?
I don't know about that.
Or
actually,
is it privately owned?
Provincial or what?
Yeah,
great question. Anyway, there we go. So it has happened here before. All right, speaking of the Sens, they took care of business on the weekend, beat the Leafs on Friday night. Matt Murray wasn't able to go after getting injured in the warm-up. They go on to a 6-2 win on Friday night. Saturday night, they return home to face the Habs, win that game 5-0. Here's how the goal scoring started.
Puck is lobbed out to center.
Here's DeBrincat down to the line. Got Greg with him. DeBrincat shot. Scores! The Cat buries it.
Meow. There you go. There's Dean and Gord with the call. Alex DeBrincat's goal. Once again on a two-on-one in which he looked like Simmer the entire time he wanted to pass. We're talking about one of the premier goal scorers, and that's been the story. Well, Alex DeBrincat is his, I don't know, his seemingly a lack of desire to shoot the puck, but he was forced into it because the pass was taken away, and he scored the goal. It was a beautiful shot and all that. Now, maybe he's trying to set up Greg for his first goal. Yeah. I guess you can look at it that way. Yeah. But anyway, he shot and scored, and that got the Sens on their way to eventually what would be a 5-0
victory. Yeah, and also strange is that how many times we've seen two-on-ones, JR, where he plays his offside, which this particular case, he's coming down the right side, and then you also recognize Montembeau, who, first of all, was really sharp in the game for the most part, closed off that short side, especially the blocker side, JR, a number of times where Ottawa had great chances. This particular case, just off the angle a tad, and DeBrincat ends up making him pay.
Here is a DJ Smith on the back-to-back wins over their divisional rivals.
The league is so, it can turn so quickly. Where we were 7 days ago after that loss to Winnipeg as to where we are feeling today, it's night and day, and we're playing with a lot more confidence. We've got the puck a lot more, you know, and it's great to beat, you know, rivals, but at the end of the day, wins are wins, and you want to get points, but you want your team to play well and have confidence, and right now we have confidence.
There you go. And, of course, one more game to play before the All-Star break. That's tomorrow night in Montreal. Would certainly send everybody who's not going to the All-Star game, which I guess is everybody but Brady Tkachuk, into essentially what turns out to be a week-long break, feeling pretty good. Three straight wins. If they turn around and end up losing to Montreal tomorrow night, then it's kind of like, well, it was a really nice weekend, but that sucked. We turn around and just lost to the team we beat 5-0.
Yeah, it is. I look at the games, and I guess I'm more interested, JR, on the other side, because, as I said, going into the weekend, rivalry games are always interesting, and a sense of Ottawa, much like back in the day, the Islanders going to Madison Square Garden, not very good teams, but they come in and play great, beat them. You have a lot of emotion. The Ottawa players fired up, but hey, you not only beat them, you won 6-2. It felt like Montreal were the quick team out of the gates on Saturday. Of course, they did not play the night before, a bit tired. Now to Tuesday going forward, what I'm just curious, I guess, going back all the way to the 11th, how much has the new look of the lines being shifted around and Ridly Gregg? Like, that's the part kind of on the other side. And I'm not talking about a playoff run. I just, when I look at rivalry games at sometimes, I just recognize atmosphere and everything else. It's not an easy way to necessarily get a total book on your club, but it was great results, and I was happy with the fans, especially on Friday night. People were just real fired up about smoking the Toronto Maple Leafs right in Toronto.
What was the, now they had a huge crowd on Saturday for the Habs game, 20,000.
Yeah.
What was the, what would you say, by your eyeball, was the percentage of Ottawa fans to Montreal fans?
Yeah, I'd go 60-40 Montreal. That was just a feel. Now, it's a little harder, guys, and here's one thing I'll say, Hammer, I don't know how you felt. When Montreal doesn't score in a game, it's really hard to know how many Habs fans are there because nobody stands up. But from an energy standpoint, I thought there were probably more, JR. But like I said, when you really get an indication is when somebody scores a goal and you're like, okay, now I can look around. But it was a fun atmosphere. You know, it was kind of back and forth. And you would expect the road fans to be a little louder. But I don't know what your feel of Hammer. But I thought there would have been – I give an edge to Montreal as far as fans.
Yeah, I completely agree. I've saw a lot more Canadian jerseys too. Just looking around at their jerseys, you saw a lot more of them in the stands. And yeah, but the Sens gave them no reason to cheer. That was the best part.
What's interesting when those teams, these games happen though, guys, is that even, I'll say back in the day, it's crazy when Pittsburgh, when I was in Washington, what's different and however this works all the time, the visiting fans are in your prime seats, right? They're not they're not pushed up to the upper bowl or they're in ends. Like, there are packs of Montreal fans, I'm assuming, on what is probably a lot of times, JR, season ticket holder spots. You know what I mean? Like, they've been sold off for whatever reason. That's the difference of trying to figure this thing out. It's no distinction. They got patches of people all over the place, not to mention a ton starting in warm-up.
Yeah, speak for yourself. I'll be up in the 400 level tomorrow night.
Oh, that's right.
For Sens Habs.
That's awesome. Yeah, you're going to Montreal.
I'm sure they're good seats.
They'll be awesome, and you'll be very tired on Wednesday, so we're looking forward to
it. No, I'll be pumped. I'll be ready to go.
All right.
You know what's funny about it, Hammer? It, where you're at, a little different, but because I've been there many times, especially when the building first opened, it's really not a ton different than sitting in the press box, right? You're a little further away,
exactly.
But you can see out of the back of the press box. I know exactly what you're talking about, where you're sitting, and You'll have a blast.
High corners. That's where the scouts sit.
So exactly. That's where we are. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly where we are.
Wear your trench coat and bring a notepad. People be like, hey, that guy, what are you writing? They always, that's the first thing they ask you.
What are you doing? What are you looking at? Matt Murray has been placed on injured reserve by the Leafs after we find out now, apparently injured his ankle in the warm-up versus the Sens on Friday. So he was unable to go against his former team on Friday after getting injured as well in the game day skate. In game two of the season when the Leafs were ready to face the Sens as well. So that's unfortunate that happened to Matt Murray. We'll see if he eventually makes it back to be able to play one of the two games that the Leafs have here in Ottawa toward the end of the
season. It'll be real interesting, JR, and more to remove the whole Sens portion of it. And this was the interesting part because the telecast started, and I know Dean Brown, I believe, on the radio had made a comment about, well, Matt Murray could still stub his toe, kind of joking. But when it came on, just the silence on television of everyone kind of like, well, that's a bit weird. And the fact that he's on the bench, then they come up with a reoccurring injury. But from a Leafs standpoint, and you look at the year you're having, and I guess very fortunate, because there's no doubt that Samsonov has moved on to be the number one goaltender, I guess I keep going back to. And, hey, maybe it can happen, because I'm certainly not counting on Matt Murray. But in the case of Samsonov, could he go head-to-head with the Tampa Bay Lightning and knock off a guy like Vasilevskiy? And if you're a Leafs fan, hey, I know they're playing very well, but to me, that doesn't have me pretty overly excited. Now, like I say, a bit of an unknown, but you know, Samsonov, early in his career now, only 25 years old, certainly not known for that either.
All right, so the Leafs lose Matt Murray on the weekend. Probably the bigger news, of course, was the Austin Matthews injury, which was announced on Friday as well, that he had suffered a knee sprain in the game against the Rangers. And Austin Matthews, as they wrote it, out a minimum of 3 weeks. So when they use the word minimum, it's like, well, that's, as the word would say, the minimum amount of time he'll be out. But that does not suggest that it couldn't be longer than 3 weeks as well. And what has been, face it, for Austin Matthews, it's been, he's still been really good.
Yeah.
But compared to the Austin Matthews we saw this season, both production-wise and just overall effects on a game, isn't quite as good as he was last year, but now he's out for a minimum of 3 weeks.
Yeah, and I do think where the big boys have played well there, JR, you look at this, and if I'm a Leafs fan, what I'll say to you is, okay, understand that, but he's gone into Steve Yzerman mode. This is where Steve Yzerman wasn't focused on all the points back in the day and became a more all-round player. And would that, and you talk about pressure, I mean, one of the storylines for Austin Matthews has been his inability to deliver in big games in the playoffs, right? In game sevens, that has been a big curse. So recommendation for him, get back. And if you're going to beat somebody in the playoffs, do it in six games.
There you go. All right. Your thoughts on that? Welcome. You can text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN1200. We'll get the thoughts of Dave Poulin, our TSN hockey insider, who is standing by and will join us after our top of the hour update coming up next on Sports Radio TSN 1200.